Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's menu is all about deserts, not dessert. This is not a dessert episode, Kyle.
Every time, even when I typed it to you, I was like, what should we talk about this week? Desserts. And then it's desert.
Dessert.
And it's like, it's so hard to keep track sometimes.
I had a little bit of a flashback to like second or third grade when I was learning how to spell. You know, you had spelling lessons in school. And I actually remember once got a point off on a spelling test for desserts and deserts. And like, for some reason, that stuck with me.
Yeah. And now you've always remembered which has one S and which has two. Everybody understands what a desert is. It is a major biome in the real world. And I think we're kind of using it as a jumping off point into any conversation about deserts. They are not the most common setting for a story.
There's Arrakis and Dune, which is a setting
all about being a desert.
It is where we see a lot of them is
it's like a secondary. It's usually used in a very racist way of like the other comes from the desert.
Right.
Or it's like the Orient.
Or you start drawing on ancient Egyptian magic and tropes, which is all of these, like sometimes they can be really racist. When they're done well, they can be really cool.
Deserts are a inhospitable environment for the most part. So they usually aren't hugely populated, or they are more disconnected and harder to contact because they're like, oh, that's really fucking hot and I don't want to, and there's no water, I can't get there, so I'm not going to.
Hot enough that you might need, say, a moisture farmer.
You might need a moisture farmer. Tatooine is a great idea of the desert.
That's where I was just going. But it's like, again, it's, but there's also,
which leans into like, it's desolate, there's not a lot going on. It's
right.
Because it's usually like, it's desolate, there's not a lot going on.
Deserts are often, in stories, challenges to be overcome.
Yes. They are not the fun character. They are man versus nature. They are a symbol of the mood of the people.
Correct.
That like Tatooine. Luke's living a bleak existence.
No, he says it. If there's a center of intelligent life, you're on the planet that's farthest from it.
Yeah. And that doesn't have to be the case. Because like, historically, desert, like civilization in the desert has been also been fucking so cool
in our world. Incredibly thriving and prosperous.
You know, like the cradle of civilization started in like the cradle of civilization where, which has like a lot of associations with the desert. It's very near the desert. Like you look at like the Bedouins and look at Morocco, look at like Mali and what's his name? Who's the famous king of Mali? The guy who was like the richest man in the world for a while there. Mansa Musa.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Mansa Musa, yeah, like the richest man once upon a time.
Yeah.
Like there's some interesting civilizations that definitely exist in the desert in our real world that are great places to draw inspiration and to really look into because they're cool.
Agreed.
Well, Ethan, go ahead and give me your prepared dishes menu description. What noodles have you brought today?
Fire falls from the sky.
Ugh.
What about yours, Kyle?
Remember when we were like, oh, it doesn't have to be man versus nature. It can be good. And then you're like, yeah, but what if it's fucking raining fire?
We went in different directions and that's okay.
Yeah.
There's no wrong way to world build except for, you know, copying and pasting. That's the wrong way to world build.
And also just being like hugely racist and shitty.
That, yes.
Yeah. I love sand. It's everywhere.
I would like to hear where you're going with that. I want to try your dish first.
I was almost going to say my description is Anakin would hate it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What is it? It's like, I love sand. It's like,
or I hate sand. It's coarse and it's everywhere.
He says it's coarse, it's rough, it's irritating, and it gets everywhere. So for you, it would be, I love sand. It's exfoliating. It's smooth and it gets everywhere.
So it is not because of those properties. Ethan, what is the main use of sand in the modern world for commercial purposes?
Making fake beaches?
No.
In places where they should be?
Construction.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah, sand's necessary for cement, concrete. Like, it's a huge need for sand in the modern world.
Yeah, I should have put that together.
Should know that, but they don't. Yeah. It's kind of a glossed over thing. And I was like,
that's pretty cool.
It's a hugely abundant substance in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, we have deserts, we have beaches, we've got like just sand comes from like various other places inland as well. And not all sand is useful for that. Some sand, like the Sahara sands, you can't really use it in that same way, I don't think. But I don't know. I don't work construction. Fuck you. But I was thinking about, well, what if sand was being used for this purpose? And it thus becomes a hot commodity. And it is, there's one place to get sand, this one desert.
Oh, okay.
And now they have, much like, you know, like you can take the Arrakis spice thing, but sure. Like we're not making an imperialist thing. We're making it that this becomes a commercial power who realizes what resource they have. And you know what they've done is they have built a great wall around the edge of the desert using the sand.
Oh, I love it.
They can construct this massive construct that really symbolizes this substance is really helpful and really valuable.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want it? Don't you want walls like we have? And they do it, one, for that, but two, for defense, and three, because they don't want anyone to steal the sand.
Right.
Because it's pretty easy to just go up and be like, we'll just shovel a bunch of sand away. Right. But they said, nope, the sand is blocked off. And
did they call it the sandbox?
You did. But much like in, you know, like the real world, there's a gradient between, like, you know, the Sahara and the Sahel.
Yeah.
You have this transitionary space. I'm going with a little bit less transitionary space. We're going with like a very like MMO style of like there is literally a desert and then all of a sudden there's a swamp. Maybe not that extreme.
Well, no, it that has basis in reality. Real life. But we've talked about Cairo and the distance from Cairo to the pyramids being like a mile.
Yeah.
Funny that is.
Yeah, Cairo is a fucking crazy city.
But that divide between city and desert is that close and that stark.
Yeah. So they're close enough to other land, but they have walled themselves off.
Mm-hmm.
They've built great buildings throughout the desert, one as shade. So the whole, so the whole place is actually quite habitable now because they've built enough shade, because they built enough towers that there's large sections that are completely shaded, not at any time of the day, just all the time. Much like you go to Saudi Arabia or somewhere that's mm-hmm. like super deserty and they've got all that fucking oil money and they just cover huge parts of civilization in shade.
Have you seen the massive mechanical umbrellas
at Mecca?
Yeah.
Oh, it's insane.
The video of them going, it's crazy shit.
Everybody should look up the infrastructure and how things run at Mecca.
It's unbelievable. It's
insane how cool that is.
Yeah.
Especially because we live in a country that isn't predominantly Muslim, but like the amount of when I was in Indonesia during the Hajj, and there were all these flight attendants boarding planes to go to Riyadh, just to be the surge flights back to Indonesia.
Wow, really?
Because there were just dozens of them, and they're like planes full of flight attendants just going to take care of the amount of people that have to get out of Mecca because it's so big for one time a year. It's such cool infrastructure.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole other side. So they've made like a shady land out of this desert because it's not raining, so they're not worried about it.
Where do they get water from?
You can do it a couple of different ways. You can make it interesting. You could just say they got some oases. Like most desert countries have oases.
Yeah.
That's where they live off
of. Or there's a river.
You know, like they all have an amount of water.
Yeah.
It's just usually scarce.
Yeah.
But
it's there.
If you eliminate the threat of climate change, then they won't be having a water scarcity problem.
Or there are moisture farmers.
No.
No moisture farmers.
That's lame.
You're lame.
I mean, it also could be that there's like an underground aquifer. Yeah. Which might actually be really cool is that they have an underground aquifer and they have used the concrete construction to build a great well with stairs going down.
Yeah.
So then they also have like people can live down there as well.
Sure.
For true coolness, or they can go down there and really enjoy it. Like they have like, you know, restaurants and like social life down here in the aquifer because it's like a little river walk.
Yeah.
And
it'd be a great setting difference. You know, like in video games, there's always like the upper city and then the under city.
Yeah.
You could have this, but it would be, you know, the cistern or something. Right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, they have to make sure they don't fuck with the water too much, but they're like, yeah, this is where we socialize, this is where we enjoy our evenings, this is where we get out of the sun if we want to, but we also enjoy the sun because this is our home.
That would be really cool if they lived and worked up top during the day or at night, but then it was so hot that they had to go work in the aquifer.
Well, they just hang out in the aquifer during like they have like a nocturnal schedule.
Yeah.
So then during the day they all go sleep.
Yeah.
Because
it's too hot.
That could be fun.
That could be fun.
So if you want to strike a deal with them for sand, you have to go knocking at night because they will be available at night to sell you however much sand you want.
Yep.
And they've got, you know, large barges and, you know, like, you know, they have, maybe there is a river so they can put it on barges and send it out. Or, you know, maybe they have just big wagons, I don't know, to just haul just boatloads of sand, because they're not selling sand constantly. When they're selling it to like a kingdom, is like, we need a lot of this right now. And you're like,
yeah,
great. And then they have a surge where they say, okay, we're going to sell like 100 tons of sand now.
Yeah.
And that will, and then we're going to hang out for a while until the next person comes, because we've built our infrastructure at this point, or they keep managing it. I don't know.
Is the sand itself made out of anything special, or is it just normal sand?
I don't know. Could be either. Okay. It could be. I wasn't thinking it was special. I was just thinking it was special because it was scarce. Because
there
wasn't other sand in the world. And maybe because maybe only they know how to build the cement or make the cement.
Right.
And they're keeping that as like a trade secret. And they know how to make it in the right way, in the way that makes it actually work. So others can see them kind of preparing it when they're like, because they have a crew that will go to help to make the cement and then say, here's how you pour it or whatever. Like, they're not doing the work. They'll just be there to like make it and then say, here, apply it in this way. And in that process, like, you know, others might try to be like, oh, what are they mixing? How's the mix go?
Yeah.
And then they can't quite get it right because there's like, just like a right technique or I don't know. But kind of leaning into, they become these construction gurus that just, and like, there is an analog here with a lot of desert, you know, deserts and river wars. Like, they are like resource rich in a, you know, like oil, or like spice. But in this case, it's the idea that they've built this great wall around themselves is, I think, the thing I was leaning on a lot. They just built a big wall.
I like the way you have turned a normally desolate area into a urban center.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool. That's an interesting flip and twist. I also, as a consumer, am a big fan of the vibes of the Fremen and, you know, like the sandbenders in Avatar The Last Airbender, who have found ways not to change the desert, but to live with it as a thing.
They're changing the desert, though.
That's my point. But yeah, I'm saying you could have societies out there that are still more Bedouin-like, that are nomadic, that live in camps.
Yeah.
And it would be cool to find a way. Maybe they're the ones that know the mix, but they don't want to live in the society, in the city. Hmm. And so that's how you have to force negotiations or a relationship between the nomadic tribes and the cities.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that could work. I think...
Maybe. That's just me inserting something I like into your world.
Yeah. Which might be overly ambitious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I think the main thing that I'm getting at here is commoditizing a really mundane natural substance.
Yeah.
Sand is really boring.
It's
really simple, but it is really valuable. And what if you commoditize that, and then there's no real downside for them? They don't have to, like, I mean, and you could insert this where they are,
that's true,
where they are like extorting people and they are exploiting labor and they are, you know, fucking up the world, but like, it not really, like, you could do it, but it's so easy to just not do that because it's such a mundane thing. Because it's imagine saying, well, we have just a bunch of mushrooms that just grow on the ground and we just sell mushrooms. It's like, yeah, okay. That seems fine. And just taking that and saying, well, the sand's just here. We like people who have the sand. We figured out what to do with the sand. You want the sand? We'll send it. We'll sell it to you. And we just sell it. And you just create I don't necessarily like the idea that you have the nomadics and the non-nomadics, unless, you know, like, because I'm thinking it's like one singular tribe who maybe were nomadic and then they realized how to use the sand and were like, oh shit, we could probably sell this to everybody else in the world.
Mm.
Like, we don't really like over there in the temperate forest. That's kind of not our style.
Yeah.
But we know them. We can go over there and be like, hey, look at what we built. You want some of this? You want some of this shit? That's good shit.
You
want
a hit? Take a hit. Take a bump.
That's good shit.
Yeah. Come into the box. Yeah. Step into the box.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the core, it's a pretty simple idea, and it is super similar to what we have in the real world, but...
No, but I, again... As I've said a million times on this podcast, Matt Colville said nothing that you invent will ever be cooler than the real world. And so how do you, this is a this is a great way of doing that, is to have a thriving, despite the fact that this, that thriving cities exist in deserts and have existed in desert-like climates, it is, the trope is still nomadic, like what, even what I just said, I fell victim to it. Nomadic tribes living out there hunting for water, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, but right? What if they're not?
But that's my point, is that even though we have all of this proof that that doesn't have to be the case, that's still the trope.
Yeah.
So change the fucking trope.
Yes. Because usually it's like, oh, well, they settle down where it's the coastal area where there is vegetation and it is, there is more water, there's more whatever. Like, you know, Tunisia, Carthage is built on the coast where it is a Mediterranean climate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the inland and the central and southern parts of the country are all desert.
Mm-hmm.
And like, but all the people lived in the north. And it's like, well, what if they lived in the south instead?
Yeah.
What if the coast was a different civilization who was highly dependent on the desert people, because the desert people were like, yeah, well, we figured out, hey, those Romans are a real problem. What if we could build a really big wall all around Carthage, a bigger wall than the one you already had that they laid siege to for like 6 months, but we could build a bigger wall and we could build something else, or we could fuck with them. I don't know. Like, we could do anything with the sand. Do you want it?
Even so, and what I said earlier, there are communities that build artificial beaches. Yes. And so that would be a great use. It's not even just building a wall. It's what if these people that lived on the coast started buying sand to make beachfront property?
it ended up being
a lie.
When you said artificial beaches, my mind immediately said Dubai would do that. And that just seems so silly that it's like this place that isn't a desert would build an artificial beach, because of course they would. It's Dubai.
Yeah.
They build everything artificial.
Right. They have artificial snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
But anyway. They also have some cool technology that comes out of it. So,
yeah. Anyway, so there you go. Now,
excellent.
Let's get onto your menu. What's your noodles?
My dish today comes from some thinking I was doing as I was preparing for our forge episode. When you're forging, whenever a blacksmith strikes a piece of metal, right, what you see, sparks fly off of it, right? Those sparks cool into metal dust and shards. And bits of metal.
Yeah.
The slag desert exists because at the center of the area, there is a massive volcano. And within the volcano, there is a forge that's manned by a giant. This giant forges all sorts of metals from all over the world, but also is the one place where they can forge the special metal of the world. That's important. But with each strike of the giant's hammer, sparks fly off out of the volcano into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so all around the volcano in an almost circular area is a desert, piles of sand, but it's all metal dust.
Interesting.
Left over from that, it's all the sparks that have landed and cooled.
Okay.
Into the dust of the metal. And so it is a desert literally made of slag. It's as fine as sand. It functions like sand, but it's all metal. And so throughout this desert, you have you can tell a very similar story as you would in a normal desert. Where do you find water? How do you find life? In my head, originally, the volcano had been at the center of a very rich and lush jungle that burned away. Uh-huh. So maybe there's life still growing out of it, but it is a desert of metal.
I think it's super fucking cool, except for the one note I want to make on the definition of a desert is literally no rainfall. And if you have a jungle, you had rainfall. So I think it can't be a jungle.
Fine. Fair point. So let's nix the jungle idea.
But it is, let's say it's a volcano that, you know,
it was in an arid area, which is fine. But yeah,
it was like, there was just a fault line that like it there was a lot of heat coming up. So it was constantly drying out the area. So like it is a dry
mountainous area. Fine. Yes.
Yeah.
And it turned a mountainous area into a desert area where instead of sand, it is metal from all of the slag that for thousands of years, the giant has just been beating the hammer.
Is the giant still there?
Yes, the giant is still there.
So the desert is growing all the time.
It is growing all the time. And particularly as a adventure setting, when the giant starts forging, you have to be on alert because it is like...
It's just like raining little...
It is raining
hot
molten slag.
Yeah.
So like hail, like a hailstorm, but it's hot molten slag.
Yeah.
Or a tiny meteor shower. And so you have to duck and dodge all of that.
If you can dodge a molten slag, you can dodge a ball. I love any setting where there is an external threat that is like a timed environmental issue.
Yeah.
The storm comes through and everyone needs to duck. You need to be out of the way. When this starts coming, you need to get to a safety. Like in Dune, they do it well with like they have the huge storms that pass through, or you know, you have a worm coming through, whatever. There's a timed environmental impact and you need to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So I think having it be like, oh, you hear a hammer stroke, you know he's about to be in full swing, so you have like a small window before he's like really made any damage when it's gonna start flying. So you hear the first, you know, like in Andor, the guy on the bell tower who plays that fucking weird, just he plays metal, that's all he does, he just drums on the metal. It's like that, but on a bigger scale that you can really feel, and then you hear it and you go,
we gotta go.
We gotta go, or we have to. We've created some sort of, like, if there's a people who live there, they've created a way to shield themselves from it, or they know, you know, you like the in Dune where it's like they get underground at night. They get underground to like at least let the surface take the hit,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they'll be fine. I don't know.
So there is a society that lives there.
Okay.
The society, it's nomadic and they are scavengers. But what they are doing is they are just like in the United States during the gold rush, you know, where you'd go down to the riverbed and you would pan for gold. Here you are sort of like in Dune trying to mine the spice from the sand. You are trying to mine out the little flecks of ore of the magical metal that the giant occasionally forges.
What is he forging?
I hadn't decided. So in my lore, the lore that I wrote, the giants, like in Jack and the Beanstalk, lived above. They lived in sort of a sky city. And then there was an event called the Collapse, where the giants fell and had to start living on Earth. And so the forge giant, whose name was Mato, she set up shop in this volcano and started making tools for the other giants that they would need to survive on Earth or on this current plane. So that's how it started and had just been sort of forging forever.
Yeah.
I also sort of like the idea that it is a mystery what they're forging.
Okay.
It's not like you've suddenly seen an influx.
Yeah,
of it's other clearly tools not, it's or
clearly
something.
Not coming to the humans and the people of the world.
Yeah.
Because, like, in my mind, it went two different ways. One, they're forging stuff for gods. So,
sure. Very Hephaestus.
So, you just literally will never see it. Or two, similar to an idea also from the Forges episode, that they forge stuff and they drop it down a hole to, like, below the ground where there's fire giants at war
beneath the surface.
And that this is, like, a neutral smith.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Who just, you know,
takes orders
and is on a contract and is like safe from the threat of any like invasion by these giants because they're above the ground.
Right.
You know, that
that's very cool. That let's go with that. I like that. I think that's very fun.
But
I also like the mystery idea.
But to the people of the world, they don't know.
So they have no idea.
That's more just for the background.
Excuse me.
Yeah. I think the idea that you don't know what you know, like you can tell it's a forge based on everything that forges and that, mm-hmm. like this is molten whatever, and maybe they see the hammer sometimes whenever they're swinging back because like out of the caldera they can just see like on occasion the hammer like peak up a little bit and then goes down and then they hear the noise like, okay, that's a giant hammer.
Yeah,
what is happening up there?
Right.
I think that's a really cool like constant vigilance type of thing.
It is not a place where like societies thrive. You maybe can live there. Maybe. And I haven't answered the water question yet.
Yeah.
But
what if ignoring the water question for a second, what if also like on occasion, if there's a clearly busted copy or attempt at a piece of whatever they're crafting, they'll just throw it out into the the slag.
I love that. Yeah, if so it's like a failed piece
where it's like it's clearly not actually a good weapon, but you could salvage it into being a, it's a lot of ore.
Yeah,
rather than just looking at those specks of ore, you're like, oh, this is a lot.
Yeah,
but nobody really realizes this is happening because the people who are in the people who like are in the slag desert are quickly scooping it up.
Yeah,
so no other people can join the fray and get involved in this. People must assume that it's just that they're constantly picking out the little specks, and they've come up with through those little specks this huge thing. But reality is they got the huge thing for free.
They just salvaged it,
and then but they got it so fast and because they're watching it constantly, they're all there, so they can see from 360 degrees when this thing comes out, and then they go get it, and then they salvage it.
And the simple solution is that they trade for water.
You need more water than that, though. You need a lot more water than that.
You trade for access to water, and they use some of the metal to make pipelines.
What if... Okay. So, like, how big is the slag desert? Because if it's big, but it's also the edge of it is visible. Like, it could be that they spend their days in the desert working, and then they go back
and panning and salvaging,
and then they go back in the evenings to like a somewhat like a semi-arid like land on the edge of it, where it's not super nice, but they could be, they have some water access, they have, you know, no threat in the middle of the night of being hit with slag.
Or take an idea from when we were discussing your dish earlier. They live underground. It's reverse mining, because mining is normally you live on the surface and you go down, dig deep for it to look for ore, right? This is reverse mining. You live underground.
And they go up.
You go up, pan for ore, look for salvage, and then go back down.
Also cool.
Yeah.
I think either one works.
Either one works.
I think, yeah, like, I think the core of it, and this is, you know, in the intent of this podcast, is like the idea of the desert is where you apply as you see fit to your own world.
Correct.
To your own work.
Like, correct.
The mechanics of how we're figuring in is irrelevant, because usually you would fit this kind of thing within a pre-existing world.
Yeah.
And the idea of that slag desert is really cool and a unique perspective on what does a desert look like, especially when you are trying to be over the top fantastical.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this is very much over the top fantastical.
Totally.
And
very Final Fantasy. Like, this would be a Final Fantasy. This would be a setting in a Final Fantasy game.
Maybe. And it also feels like a great place to have in like a large spanning world, like a Forgotten Realms, where like you just have a shit ton of stuff, and you're like, well, here's an adventure you're gonna do that happens to involve giants, because we're going to the Slag Desert, which is a place no one really lives, but people know giants are there, and giants are dangerous, and it's not hospitable.
And you need enough metal to make a sword, so that you can kill the
or it's dragon, just oh whatever. Can you go parlay with this smith?
Oh yeah, sure.
And then you have to cross the slag desert,
the whole of it. Yeah.
Ooh. And that's just a great ambiance.
Yeah,
where like it's not a central figure, you're not trying to pan it, you're not doing anything, you're just crossing the slag desert to get to the mountain to talk to the smith.
Yeah,
because you are representatives of somebody important who is contracting them for something.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought. Yeah. And then you just get to witness all of it, and you don't need to explore. You explore it by witnessing it, not by being a part of it.
Which is like any idea that we do in this podcast is always just like, well, you can just put that in there as set dressing and move on.
Yeah. No, you could just say, yeah, there's the slag desert, and the giant lives in the volcano, and she is just constantly forging things, and it's all slag. And oh, if you go out there, by the way, if you hear a clang, you've got exactly 8.2 seconds until it starts raining fire.
Boom.
Done. I'm still a little hungry, Kyle. Can we warm up? Can we microwave some frozen lasagna?
All right, 1 minute on the clock.
Ding.
I'm gonna combine it with another famous trope, is underground civilization.
Sure.
That they're underground. Usually, there's a lot of water, and the implication is a lot of water. But what if there's a giant desert in a great cavern beneath the ground that, you know, like just it extends for eons, but like it just keeps going and going, and there is no water, there's no drip, there's no whatever, like there is a dry stone above you, there is dry stone beneath you, there is no water anywhere, and no one knows why.
Yeah.
That's it.
Huh. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
All I'm on board with that.
And ding, 1 minute.
In one of our earlier podcasts, very early days, we talked about, I had an idea for a glass mountain that would reflect all the light around it, and it was in the middle of a desert, but it was so intense the light would refract and it would fuse the sand around it into glass, basically. Yes. giant death ray.
Yeah, and it was like at the it's a really cool idea.
Over time, that mountain has actually eroded, and so now there is just a desert of glass.
Uh-huh.
And it's little particles so fine of glass that it's again as fine as sand, but it is still glass, and so it is blinding. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing, it's you basically cannot traverse this desert during the day, because not because it's so hot,
but because it's so bright.
Mm-hmm. just like in the far north, you have to wear special glasses to protect your eyes from light bouncing off the snow.
Yeah,
it's that, but a desert.
Cool. That's, I like it.
Yeah.
I also like the original idea way back when. Whenever we talked about that in an early episode that you shouldn't listen to, but it was a cool idea.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right. Well, what stuck for you?
I like the sand construction link. I like turning a...
And you all learned something today.
Yeah. I like what you did by turning a normally desolate area into a thriving urban area. Mm-hmm. You made something that is based in reality sound fresh and new and interesting, and then made it easy for people to go learn about cool things in our own world. And that's always fun. So well done, Kyle. I will say what is sticking for me most, I think, out of the slag desert is the slag element, is that I just remember watching these blacksmithing videos and seeing all of the sparks, and like they set fire, and then you see when they're grinding the collection of steel dust at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's this is an idea of, again, based off of something foundational and in the real world.
Yeah.
That is the part that I like about it. It's not necessarily that steel dust itself is so cool, but it's this one small thing in a real world making it bigger to the point that it feels fantastical.
Yeah.
What about you? What stuck for you?
The slag, I think, is awesome. And it's the idea that, like, you would approach the mountain. And I like the idea of, like, having to walk through it.
Yeah.
I think getting lost in the who's living there thing, I don't think it's as fun. I think it's the idea that it's the foreigner coming to the place, seeing the desert and saying, oh, it's a desert. All right, prepare yourselves, whatever. And you start walking, and then you're like, this feels different. This is weird. And then you see some slag be knocked into the sand, and you look, and you're like, oh, this is all this? Is all metallic in some way? What the fuck? Yeah. That, you know, and maybe it was obvious with metallic, but that, like, that realization what it is, and that it is this strange desert that is artificial as could be, I mm-hmm. think is really cool. And I like the idea of, like, you have to get to the mountain to meet with the giant, and that's such a great...
While dodging.
Whether the dodging or not, but it's setting the scene so well for that interaction that you have to walk through a desert of all of their forging materials that have clearly been accumulated for hundreds of years, that this guy is more important than you, he's more powerful than you, he's been around forever, or she in this case, and there's a power dynamic that's set through that. There is an ambiance that's set through that. Mm. It is such a good environmental tone that I really like.
I also your addition there of the failed masterwork pieces, like, that are thrown out of the volcano, kind of dotting the landscape,
mm-hmm.
adds a level that I was not expecting there to be, because one, it would depend on what they were commissioned to make. So it's not like, oh, it's all one architectural style, is that it's all different things. It's all random.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, you said if you hear a hammer clang, you have like 10 seconds until it starts raining fire.
Yeah.
But occasionally you also hear, like, I can imagine you also hearing a unsatisfied, frustrated grunt or roar.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hear that, that means, oh, you only have potentially 10 seconds until you're hit by a giant.
Yeah. Or just hope, you just got to hope that the giant thing is thrown in a different direction.
Yeah.
Or get ready to dodge.
Yeah. A big, big thing.
Like that one orc at Minas Tirith who just dodges the giant piece of stone at the last second. No problem whatsoever.
Fun fact, that orc was designed off of Harvey Weinstein.
I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which it shows. Harvey Weinstein is an ugly man.
Yep. That orc is way more attractive than he is.
Yeah, inside and out.
Agreed. Agreed.
All right. Well, that's our Harvey Weinstein talk for the day, for the future of this podcast. Well, that's what's stuck for us. Let us know what's stuck for you. Email's in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the desert.
Goodbye. I'm not going to the desert.
It's fun, man.